This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. So what makes a protest movement capable of real political change? It's a question that a lot of people are asking this week as hundreds of thousands of marchers descended on New York City to demand more political action to stop global warming.
The huge protest came as world leaders gather in New York to begin a long negotiation on a new climate treaty. At the UN summit earlier today, President Obama acknowledged the difficulty of the challenge ahead. He also acknowledged the protests in the streets.
The alarm bells keep ringing. Our citizens keep marching. We cannot pretend we do not hear them. We have to answer the call.
Obama and his fellow leaders from around the world couldn't have missed those marchers, as many as 400,000 of them, that demanded quicker action to reduce carbon emissions. This week's rally was the largest in the U.S. since the anti-Iraq war protests back in 2003.
To get some insight into what fueled these protests this week and how they might actually affect an event like the U.N. Climate Summit, we turn to Hari Han. She's an associate professor of political science at Wellesley College and author of How Organizations Develop Activists, Civic Associations, and Leadership in the 21st Century. And Hari Han, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
So Bill McKibben, the climate change activist, was behind this big rally this week. We've seen big protests like this before, but not as big as this. So what elements went into this one that explains the extraordinary number of people who participated?
Well, to put a little context on this march, they are estimating that about 400,000 people came out to march in New York City on Sunday. And the last time we had a big climate rally, or actually the first time Bill McKibben tried to organize a climate rally was about 8 years ago, and he had about 1,000 people out there. And the news stories after that rally 8 years ago was, hey, this is the biggest climate march we've had in the United States ever. And so the question really is, how do they get from 1,000 people to 400,000 people in 8 years?
Great question. Yeah. How do they?
Well, part of the story that's come out is that there's been a lot of attention to the social media and the online outreach that a lot of these organizations did. They created a movie called Disruption that was seen by lots of people and sent all over the internet. But I think the real story underlies all that work that was going on online, where a lot of these organizations were working in that intervening 8 years to create an infrastructure of create an infrastructure through which all these people could realize their own power.
Right? I see.
And so what I mean by that is, you know, it's Alice Walker who said that the most common way that people give up their power is by not knowing how much power they have. And really what a lot of these organizations were doing is they were saying, how can we make people realize that the actions that they take can make a difference? And then when you transform people's capacity to feel like they can make a difference, then it's a lot easier to get 400,000 people to come out on one day.
Now, you write about something that I want to ask you about, something called sprawling networks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a way of sort of explains why these protest movements go so deep. Can you tell us sort of what is a sprawling network and how it applies to this?
Sure. Another word for the sprawling network would be sort of a distributed leadership campaign, where instead of having just a few people in the center of an organization who are doing all this work to try to reach out and get hundreds of thousands of people to show up to a rally, instead what you do is you distribute leadership out to a sprawling network of people, where you have thousands upon thousands of people all around the communities around the country who are working to transform their own communities, so that when you're trying to put out a call to get 400,000 people to show up to a rally, you're not just depending on five people sending out a lot of emails to people all over the country. You're depending on...
So it's a network of networks, almost.
A distributed leadership network, right, that operates in communities across the country that are able to sort of take these people and then engage them in different ways, in more powerful ways.
Oh, I see. So give me an example of an organization that's been successfully building like this using sprawling network.
Well, really, if you look at the history of social movements in the United States, almost every social movement has this kind of example. So looking back from the civil rights movement to the temperance movement in the early 1900s to the beginning of the Christian coalition in the late 1900s, like a lot of what we saw was that all these organizations started by having people who were making change in their local community. So with the temperance movement, it was people who were shutting down bars. With the Christian coalition, it was mothers who were trying to organize their schools to change the curriculum. With the civil rights movement, it was kids who were integrating diners. And in all these instances, the reason why that action was important was because people were realizing the power that they had to make a difference through those local activities that could then be aggregated up to make big national change. And so an organization I think there are a lot of organizations that are doing really good work on the climate movement. One organization here in Boston is an organization called Mothers Out Front. They just started a year ago, but what they've been doing is they have engaged moms, caregivers, grandparents in over 78 house parties, and over 600 moms have gotten engaged over this past year already. And because of that action, they've been able to build a depth of leadership that has gotten them 2 meetings with Deval Patrick in the last 3 months.
I see. So to bring it back to what's going on in New York, I want to ask you a little bit more about Bill McKibben, the climate activist who is very much sort of behind this rally. He tells a story about being an activist and how he thought it was enough just to write books about the truth of climate change, right? And just get the information out there, and that would be enough.
Mm-hmm.
But he learned otherwise.
Yeah, it's really funny. When you hear Bill McKibben speak, he says he's been working on climate issues for over 3 decades now. And when he first started working on it, he thought, you know what I'm going to do is I'm going to go out and I'm going to write a book about the science of climate change. And once people realize the problem, they'll make the change that they need to do. And when he tells that story, it's a laugh line. Everyone laughs. Hmm. And the reason that they laugh is because it seems so naive to us now that the problem with climate change is a problem of information, right? And what really the problem is, it's not a problem of information, it's a problem of power. And the reason why things like the People's Climate March are so important is because by bringing 400,000 people together on one day in one place, then that's a moment that shows the counterbalancing power of the people relative to the structures that already exist. Mm.
But does it stick, or what determines that it's going to, that it's not just going to peter out? Because we've seen big protests relatively recently. I'm thinking of the Occupy movement. A lot of people, a lot of noise. But as time passed, it sort of seemed to peter out. People may argue with what I'm about to say, but I've got the sense that the Occupy movement kind of faded away.
Sure. I think if you look at a lot of the recent movements that we've had in the past few years, you can think about Occupy Wall Street, the Arab Spring, and the gathering in Tahrir Square and Gezi Park in Turkey, that what you see across a lot of these situations is that there is a lot of online mobilization that brought a large number of people together for a very concentrated period of time. And in some cases, like in Egypt, they were able to overthrow a government. They were able to see big changes. But then over time, they haven't been able to protect those changes. And why is that? Why haven't they been able to translate their protest into power? And I think the answer to that question really lies in part of what we're talking about before, which is the ability of these organizations, when they're mobilizing people, not just to go broad, but also to go deep, right? And to build those kind of transformative experiences and create that infrastructure that lets people realize their own power, so that even after the protest ends on Sunday, what a lot of these climate groups are going to be doing is keeping up that pressure and trying to get the people that they engage to come out to the rally to continue to put pressure on elected officials and policymakers to make the changes that are necessary.
And is it your sense that that's what we're seeing with this climate movement?
I think that is what we're seeing. I mean, you know, part of this, the difference between the rally of 1,000 people 8 years ago and 400,000 people now, I think, really speaks to the ways in which the climate movement has changed in a big way, so that it's not just focused on going broad, but also it's focused on going deep. And it's going deep in the ways that build those sprawling networks of distributed leaders who have that transformative experience of realizing their own power so that they can continue to put pressure on policymakers.
And speaking of that, you know, I have to imagine that if you're one of those protesters, or if you're Bill McKibben or any one of those 400,000 people down there, and you hear the president of the United States talking to 120 other world leaders and saying, our citizens keep marching. We cannot pretend we do not hear them. We have to answer the call. That must be an indication that we're getting through.
I think certainly, Obama wouldn't have said that, right, if it hadn't made a difference. And one thing to note is that 400,000 people wasn't only the biggest climate rally that we've seen in the United States history, but really it's one of the biggest gatherings of people that we've seen on any political issue in a long time. And that just sort of signifies the depth of commitment that a lot of people have on this issue. And having that depth of commitment is what begins to push for change.
And let me ask you about, big numbers of ordinary people, but also big names. I mean, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont was there, New York Mayor Bill de Blasio, Leonardo DiCaprio, the actor. Do big names actually help make movements like this more effective?
I think the big names certainly help in the sense that they're able to call attention for people who may not have thought about climate change as an issue. They begin to pay attention when someone like Leo DiCaprio makes it a signature issue of his. But really, in the end, I think what really matters is not so much having the big names out there, but it's really having the ordinary people who are continuing to do all that work in their communities, who then figure out how they can aggregate all that work in such a way that it pushes on our national leaders.
Sure. Really interesting. Let me ask you one more question. More than 100 people were arrested yesterday in New York's financial district, where about 1,000 protesters halted traffic. And I'm wondering what kind of effect or how does that play into the effectiveness of a movement like this? How important is that civil disobedience piece?
Sure. Well, throughout history, all movements have a range of different kinds of actions that are going on, from civil disobedience, like what we saw yesterday in Wall Street, to the big protests that we saw on Sunday. And all of these things together are really what create the pressure for change. I think the key challenge for movement organizers at this point is to figure out how to make sure that all the moving pieces are working together in an interdependent way so that the message to the policymakers is clear.
Well, that's Hari Han. She's an associate professor of political science at Wellesley College. She's also author of How Organizations Develop Activists, Civic Associations, and Leadership in the 21st Century. Professor Han, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.